They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax. Joining us today, I'm really excited, we have Karen Huffer. Dr. Huffer is a multi-talented lady. She's an author. She's an advocate. She's been doing all kinds of things. And now, adding to her resume is professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. Karen, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Oh, it's really my pleasure, Sue. I'm so glad to be back.
Karen, one of the things that one of the books that you wrote was Legal Abuse Syndrome, and you've been doing training and webinars and advocacy work and all kinds of stuff. Give us a little background on what you're doing and how this new job as professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice is going to help you.
We changed our organization to Equal Access Advocates about 4 years ago with the idea that we are going to train as many advocates as we can and certify them, because of all the complaints I get about the courts, the answer continues to be having those courts filled with advocates that are trained to use federal law, which supersedes state and local law and all the local rules, in order to assure that individuals get a fair hearing. What we have is a nation of bullying activity, a lot of power differential, and where the courts feel like insiders against the individual, especially the pro se, and then especially those with disabilities. But when I wrote Legal Abuse Syndrome, I put out to the world the idea that if you are held under the stress and threat of litigation with the power differential, you are not getting equal access and equal power, that it can affect your health. It can exacerbate existing conditions, or it can cause literally a post-traumatic stress disorder. We now have PTSD as an epidemic in this country. Is it all coming from war? Is it all coming from earthquakes, tornadoes, and auto accidents? Absolutely not. It's coming from people being mean to people and people ganging up to be mean to people, using our taxpayer institutions to do so. I work in that every day. And while there are organizations out there that are purportedly to help those with disabilities and those in court, what we find is that person that will go in there with you, that will help you get the alterations you need to have equal access, the person that reminds the court federal law supersedes and it dictates the way the person is treated today, that simply is non-existent in most organizations. So that's what we have taken up. Well, I'm just so thrilled that John Jay College of Criminal Justice, I was invited to speak at their international conference last June, not this June, but the one a year ago, June. And we found a wonderful marriage. We were all talking about inclusion, social justice, the rule of law, that kind of thing. And we found that these are my people, you know. So I now am an adjunct professor there with the College of Professional Studies. I will be offering this training for advocacy, and we will be getting these courts filled with certified advocates. Their clout is going to help a great deal with breaking through a lot of the barriers.
So you've been doing this for a while. You've been certifying advocates and sending them into court. Has it made a difference that you can see?
A huge difference, huge difference. From the very personal, the fact that in the training we teach them how to do the advocacy in a way that is in line with the court and actually helps the court.
What kind of, I mean, you talk about people with disabilities, and in so marrying what you're doing with what I'm doing, we're looking at bullying that goes on. People with disabilities are huge targets in HOAs because they cannot fight back.
Well, what is the first thing we do when the family's raised? If we had a big house, we go get ourselves a condo, right? We go get ourselves a smaller place. We don't want to do lawn care anymore. We like the amenities. Oh, my goodness, we have a pool. We have a workout room. We have a tennis court. Isn't this wonderful? Then we move in, and we get the rules. The rules seem reasonably okay. And then we find that the power structure that is so pathological occurs right in your homeowners association. So we wind up believing we're going to have friends and we're going to have these parties once a year and whatever they do, and all of a sudden you have this power structure coming down on you. Sometimes with criminal intent, I'm not going to tell you lots of stories, but I've got them. If we ever just have a long time, I can tell you a lot.
You have an hour. You have an hour. So if you have stories you want to...
One in Las Vegas, Nevada, that the board devised a method to... It had a five-acre common area, equestrian area, and they decided they were going to steal it. So piece by piece, the board was devising a criminal method to simply convert that common area. And it was caught after the first acre 10 of property with the guest house, with the pool, and with the club house. Actually, the guest house was used like the caretaker's residence. After that got stolen, they said, oh, my goodness, what happened? That was a paper shuffle at a board meeting. Well, the owner, new owner that stole it, put up a fence, sold it for $350,000. And moved on down the road. And so the rest of the board thought, we can just go ahead and chop up the rest. Well, we caught it at that point. And we said, no more. But it ended up in a war in the neighborhood, the usual kind, with a certain faction coming out to intimidate others and attempt to discredit them. And so you get this whole adversarial action in your neighborhood. Now what happens? The couple was elderly, they got rid of the big house, they moved to a condo, and they find themselves in this kind of mess. Well, already, you're getting elderly and you may have some conditions, but once you are in a lawsuit or you are in a legal action against your board, you get no R&R. You get no rest. It is on you all the time, and you can be harassed and intimidated and forced into fines and various things truly designed to take your property. We have widows who are left, and they become targets. I dealt with one association where 48 members were being denied their mail.
What?
And yes, they were denied their mail. They literally had an automobile of one of the board members tried to run them off the road, And one came with a gun to their garage while they were cleaning their garage and threatened them. So these things are erupting way, way out of control. And if we don't stop and say, what power do we have? These individuals, this poor widow, the people that are losing their homes or the homes are under threat, or they're being fined unfairly, need to understand that they do have some federal rights, but most of them are not accessing them. And I agreed to help the 48 people. I organized them on paper because they were distanced from me in another state. I organized them on paper, showed them sociologically where their medical was higher than the average for that kind of population, and all of the different things that were going on, how I felt comfortable testifying that this very likely was a factor in some of their deteriorating health. They got so scared to use it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, do we dare admit we have a disability? If we admit that, they'll really come after us.
Yeah.
Wrong. If you admit that and you invoke your right to use the Americans with Disabilities Act as it stands now, then they can't harass, they can't intimidate, they can't lawfully do the kinds of things they're doing. So that's what my advocates are trained to do. And we expose this, we bring federal actions against them, federal complaints to the Department of Justice. Mostly, homeowners will come under Title III, but they can come under Title II if they're in court. If the court process is not fair, that's under Title II. USC 42, ADA, and it's under Titles II and III.
Is there, in the Fair Housing, you can actually file a complaint with Fair Housing Administration, and they will, if they agree to take your case, they will investigate and represent you. And we periodically hear stories of associations that have been found guilty of violating the fair housing laws and being charged with and being fined by the government huge sums of money. Does the ADA do that? Is there some mechanism there, or is it just a law that you use in court?
That's a really good question. Title III can have state law that you can go under, and sometimes that will pay quicker than federal. It also is federal, and the fines are quite substantial. If your first offense, I believe it's $75,000, and that's for an individual, and it can be higher than that for a second offense. I believe they have been raised even recently, and I have to check that. But if it's a Title III issue, Title III is a private organization serving the public. And I know that these organizations of board members and those that manage the associations have gotten to the legislatures and tried to sidestep. So we are in a continual tug of war, being sure that the federal rights still can apply with these people. Now, Title II, if the government chooses to take it on, usually they come in, investigate, and then they try and work out a settlement agreement. And that agreement, then, they give them a warning, and they have to do certain things in order to comply. But that would be the court part. And so if they comply, that's good. If not, then they will bring suit, and those can be very powerful. What's important here, though, is the politics. You have the local politics and federal politics.
Oh, yeah.
And so when we're dealing with it, very often we just have to consider that we're up against a huge power that is institutionalized to protect the board and to protect the management. So
you're talking about the Community Associations Institute that represents that represents associations and their own interests, because they're the ones ultimately who are doing the bullying.
Right.
It's their members that are doing the bullying.
So what's important, and you have to remember in all of this, I'm really smart and I've got a PhD and all of that, but I'm not a lawyer. So when I speak the law, what I'm saying is our experience, and I'm saying what we find, and I'm not speaking to you and giving you legal advice. I'm encouraging you in your area to always check local wisdom with local law, because they know how this ebb and flow is going in your area. Now, in the Las Vegas case, we happened to be able to find many absentee owners, and what we did was talk to them about signing a proxy so that we had their vote so that we could put a stop to them taking the property. So what we did is literally go in and took over the board meeting and virtually elected a whole new board based upon having those proxies. Now, unfortunately, once that was done, guess what the other members did? They ran out and tried to get rules and everything that you could not go out and get the proxies and do that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the people, so you have to check what the rules are in the area. But it is a matter of recognizing the power differential and causing yourself to say, what am I going to do about this power differential? And under the Americans with Disabilities Act, USC 42-12203, it says that if you have a disability, you cannot be harassed, intimidated, threatened, and anyone helping you cannot be harassed, intimidated, threatened, or in any way can they interfere with you helping that person. So this is what I train our advocates in. You can step up and you can begin to confront these issues and say, this isn't fair. And Your Honor, we'd like to invoke this at this time because they are harassing whatever. And in that courtroom, it's interesting. If we don't just relegate the process, allowing them to use it as a long-arm extension of their bullying and abuse, it's really interesting what happens in the forum when you're in the courtroom. And we've gotten accommodations for the person because they need them. They need breaks if they have to rest. Their health is being affected. They're being sued miserably. And so we have to change the process so it's more fair to the person. Now, what I find is we had one attorney come in and say, you're too far apart. This can never be mediated out or worked out. You're just too far apart. I said, they're not far apart at all. You're forcing it far apart. These people want peace, and they need their home. And, yes, they can work this out. Why are you refusing to work it out? Because they have a right to a fair forum where they're equal. And so we interfere with the games. The usual games that are played, we identify. We ask the people, what paperwork have you received lately that reflects a threatening intention? I want copies of that paperwork. What are they saying? That might very well violate federal law.
So, Karen, let me stop you here and ask you a very quick question. In order to claim to be disabled, do you have to have a doctor's letter agreeing that you're disabled? Or what if you don't have a known disease? Or what's the definition? What qualifies you to be disabled?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that, because we are mainly focusing on the invisible disabilities. If you have been under fire this way, chances are very good you have one of the invisible disabilities that are covered by the law.
That's what I'm aiming at. That's great. Yeah,
anxiety,
that's where I'm heading. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, all of that, traumatic stress, any of that. You can have raised blood pressure, you can have exacerbation of a condition. Now, you do get one diagnosis from a licensed physician. You give that to your advocate. We then take that to court administration. We don't file a motion in court, and you don't serve the other side any more than the judge decides if you can use the wheelchair ramp or not, or where it's going to be placed. ADA accommodations are administrative, and they're mandates. They're not discretionary. The court can't say, no, we're not going to allow it, as long as it's reasonable. So what we do is take the ones that, if they walk into court, here's how it usually goes. Other side sues for something because you painted your eaves the wrong way, or you built a little gazebo in your backyard, and they say, no, you couldn't, and or you built it with the old board, the new board comes on, and they decide they want you to tear it out. I've had all these things happen.
Yeah.
So you go to court, and they come in, and they say they're crazy, they're unreasonable, they're refusing to pay, whatever, yada, yada, yada. And so once we file with court administration, what's quite beautiful is we get the accommodations, we come into court, and all the court can know, or your opposition can know, is that you are going to be using accommodations because they'll see some of them. But if you don't have them, how many times the judge has looked out and says, well, you don't look disabled to me.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. What medical credentials do you have, Your Honor?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. We have expert information here. If you are accusing the other side of causing your disability, now they have a right to the information. If you're just asking for your accommodation so you have a fair hearing, it's not their business. And it's kind of fun. You go in there and the other side says, well, we weren't served anything. We don't know anything about this. And I always say, Your Honor, would you please educate them as to the Americans with Disabilities Act and that they are not entitled to the information. They never will be served it. And this is confidential. And if it's going to be discussed any further, we need to do that in camera, or we need them to exit, them and all the rest of the public to exit the courtroom. What is of concern to me is that homeowners association residents, elderly, veterans, and victims of domestic violence tend not to use their rights under federal law because they're afraid to admit it. And I was talking to Patrick Kennedy the other night. We are celebrating the first 25 years of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Second 25 years is going to be focusing on the non-apparent disabilities. So we are really going to give it a push. Very, very important that we recognize that everyone in that courtroom has to be treated with dignity. And the word crazy, I never want to hear it again in a legal matter. It has no legal value. It has no medical value. So they get one diagnosis. We take that diagnosis with our list of accommodations. We give that to the ADA access coordinator in court administration. And they are then within about 10 days to respond to us with what they approved or denied. If they deny, they have to show how it was not reasonable for that court. It would cost too much money. I can't ask them to put in a glass elevator because my client has claustrophobia. You know,
yeah.
I can ask them to hold it in a different room.
Yeah. Okay.
Because my client can't go up in a regular elevator. So one is reasonable, one is not. And then we substitute. We work with the courts. And we often work things out very well for the client. But whatever they need, federal law says they have to have, and they can't be punished, they can't be intimidated, all that stuff. USC 42-12-203.
We're talking to Dr. Karen Huffer. Karen, I've talked to many people. As you know, I get calls and emails and from homeowners, and when I find out that they do have some form of a disability, I encourage them to sort of invoke the fair housing laws. Mm-hmm. And the association then demands, ridicules, makes fun of them for being disabled, and they want all of their medical history. I want to make sure that the listeners know that you don't have to give that.
Absolutely not. And if they're going to do fair housing, they should do ADAAA to offer accommodations for any legal proceeding they're involved in. And then the thing that is of concern to me is that with enough bullying and duress, they get these people to sign things against their own best interest.
Yeah.
Once you've signed, you're done for. They're going to keep that in your face from then on.
Yeah.
My advice is sign nothing. Sign nothing. Refuse to give any information. Get a trained advocate, because they will be there to help you not get so frightened that you sign against your best interest. And if it's not a trained advocate, the problem we have is the advocate can get bullied too. You know, I'm one little old woman, and I roll into many of these things in a wheelchair because I have a mobility disability, and I'm short on top of it. And I go in the faces of these people because you have to. But I can only do it gently, firmly, and knowing I solidly have this law behind me. The ADAAA is the biggest boon to our work that we have ever had. I worked under the ADA of 1990, and it was good, but business got right into it and began to turn it around and neutralize it.
Let's call business what it is, the Community Associations Institute, right?
Yes.
Let's let everyone know who we're dealing with and who the enemy really is.
Yes. And it's a power organization, and it empowers these boards that are less than honorable. Let me tell you, less than honorable.
And you don't even deal with all this, as you, No, this is good information. Tell me, how do people find a trained advocate?
Well, number one, go to my website, equalaccessadvocatesplural.com, equalaccessadvocates.com, and information is there. One, how to become one, which I hope every person you ever meet becomes one, because if you picture our courthouses and how the power differential is squeezing the average person right out of our own system, the only response that I know that makes a difference is to fill that courthouse with advocates that are there insisting they have accommodations, that are there in the courtroom with them, that are there saying, wait a minute, Your Honor, we need a break, my client is symptomatic, and seeing to it they're treated with respect and dignity. If that isn't done, we can call corruption all day long, we can file suits, we can do all these other things. In 30 years of doing this, I don't find them nearly as effective as a good advocate by your side during all of the processes. Never go alone and never go without a recorder. You know, and with a trained advocate, we need many more. I'm training a group now of about 20 that are like racehorses. When I open that gate, God help California, North Carolina, Texas, and I forget the other state they're from, but God help them, because they're coming out strong. These people are fed up with the foreclosures. They're losing their homes over nothing. Over fake signatures, games being played, you know. So you know it very well.
Yes, oh yeah.
So at any rate, we're training them. So I would like to, if you don't find one and I can't hand you one, we do work with a lot of people long distance. I can be in court in San Francisco in the morning on the phone and in Philadelphia in the afternoon. So I appear a lot by phone. right with the client, but we've done the paperwork and we've let the court know the federal rights are being invoked. So mess around too much, federal supersedes. And the beauty is many times the judge is just doing what judges do, and by the time the person is misrepresented to the court, they look like bums. And so the judge fines for the power guys because they're in there all the time and they know how to play it. So we have to balance that. That's what the access is all about.
One thing that I keep wondering is we're looking at making sure that people with disabilities are treated fairly, but isn't everyone entitled to being treated fairly? I mean, shouldn't the courts be unbiased and fair in dealing with everyone?
Well, that's the question of the day. However, we don't have the clout and the lobbying group and all of that behind us the same as we do if we have a disability. However, when you look at the number of people that are suffering, and I'll say, have you been to your doctor and checked how you're feeling? I don't ask any doctor to give me a certain diagnosis for a person. I just say, go to your doctor, go to your psychiatrist, counselor, whoever, and tell them how you're feeling. And then whatever you come back with, I will work with you on it. And they come back with diagnoses because we are being mean to each other in this country. Mm. Why, I don't know.
We are
unnecessarily mean. Instead of being good neighbors, some people are getting in positions of power and abusing it. But if you look at Phil Zimbardo's work, who has his new movie out on the Stanford Prison Experiment, and he showed where if you just choose students and you give one group a role of power over the other, what happens? It becomes very imbalanced. So the entire setup in a homeowners association with elections and the way that these things are done makes them vulnerable to abuses of power. Some simply don't do it. You know, some homeowners associations just behave well and don't do this. But those that set out to do it, it becomes so pathological. The diagnoses are not hard to come by at all. They're real. When I set legal abuse syndrome out because it isn't a diagnosis, it's the etiology, it's where it came from. So it's like rape trauma syndrome. So if you're in court and you have any kind of PTSD or other condition, I will say, is the cause the legal process? And if so, that's the causative factor. But if you look at how this works together, of course we have a public health crisis. We're creating it out of human-on-human cruelty.
Yeah, I think, you can look at the way we're raising kids, the way we're developing our residential areas, the lack of space, the whole way of life is not conducive to a healthy lifestyle. And I really worry about what we're doing to our kids and our grandkids and future generations with our wacky nonsense thinking these days.
We're not inspiring them.
Well, there's no place for them to go and play. We're just taking every square inch of land we can find and we're building on it because that generates taxes for the local governments. The kids are then shunted indoors. If they live in an HOA and there's a little patch, then you get these people who, the board members who don't want kids running around. So the parents are fined. The kids are sent in. I mean, they're not allowed to ride their bikes. They're not allowed to play ball. They're not allowed to do anything. So the kids are inside, gaining weight, just getting unhealthier by the minute. They're in front of TVs, they're in front of, they're on games and just not getting a normal life, not learning how to interact. So all of a sudden, everybody is the enemy. I mean, they're not learning anything. They're really not learning anything. And this is being done by design. Whether the architects of this stupidity are aware of what they're doing or whether it's an unintended consequence, but it doesn't take a genius to figure out what's going on and where this is going to lead us.
Absolutely not. And the children, the worst part is the community then feels predatorial to them, and they are victimized. So they have no opportunity to feel good about their neighbors, to feel protected. The village is not raising these children. The village is treating them very punitively and shunning them. One of the most powerful things one human can do to hurt another is to shun them and ridicule. And when that happens, I mean, for years, I think it's the Amish and certain of those groups, their entire power structure is based on shunning.
Yeah.
If you misbehave, you get shunned, and so people behave. And this has become an automatic byproduct of certain power. Now, I describe in my book how the power-centered person only thinks of themselves and their profit. So they're not at all thinking of the good of the community, because what we're doing is also destroying our property values. When the word gets out that this is a war zone in your property, God help you wanting to sell your property. So we're really outsmarting ourselves by electing these power-oriented people. But you get people who are totally self-centered. They get no pleasure out of bringing joy to anybody else. They only get up and see how they can exert power on other people. You'll find they have their spies. They're out walking in the neighborhood. They're looking for where there's a violation. And then you start getting harassed. So, yes, our children are learning that life is not very friendly. It's not very loving. You don't get to go out for Halloween and trick-or-treat like I did in my community when I was a child. It's dangerous, and it's your parents might get in trouble. It is the most unhealthy. Then you turn to your system for help, and this is where I get disturbed. You turn to your court for help. I paid all of my payments. I did this legally when I did it. I built the gazebo. I built the boathouse, and the board approved it. I did everything legally. Now this board wants me to tear it down. You go to your court, and all of a sudden you find the court's worse than you were encountering with the board. You know, now you got the power of the law coming down on you, used by these power seekers that are on the board. Very important that we change how we elect these people. There is a method called sortition that should be looked at by everybody. And it's how you have a group of people in a bank, and they just rotate so many months at a time that they serve in a position of responsibility in any kind of group. Judges should be on that kind of system. And certainly homeowners should not be elections, because they end up being as corrupted as our regular elections, where people go out and simply don't play fair by the rules. As long as the rules are followed, that's one thing, but they tend to violate the rules for power and lie for power and discredit people for power.
Yeah.
We don't need that, you know, not in the neighborhood.
You know, we keep talking about how we should fix these things. Do we really need associations? I mean, I've been asking that for a long time. You talked about condos and downsizing. You can still downsize. Do you really need a homeowners association or a condo association for that matter? It's just,
I don't think so.
And everybody seems to think, oh, well, we've got to fix them. I don't think you can fix them. I think they're just an aberration. They go against the grain. They go against everything that is human nature. Look at whether we want to keep building them.
Well, the problem is the power structure keeps building them, and it's hard to find a home without covenants.
I know, but this is where we come in, and we need to demand. See, we've forgotten that we're the consumers and the taxpayers, and ultimately the government works for us. You know, we've turned this all around on its ear. You've got an industry that we're their clients, but they treat us like they're slaves, and we accept it. Nobody has said, "Hey, wait a minute, back down. This is not your job. Your job is to keep the books, period. Not to go snooping in people's backyards and finding fault." And fining them and pocketing the fine.
Well, yeah, and charging out the gazoo for things like one board was charging $400 and some for every meeting. And I said, what are they eating and drinking that they need to be paid $400 to have a short meeting?
The board was charging?
Yeah, yeah, they were being paid $400 and some for every meeting. So we find terrible violations. I agree with you. That isn't something I'm an expert in, is how to get rid of them. I certainly see where our Constitution is completely compromised by them. The other thing, when I deal with the people that are struggling in them, they're worn out. You know, the one woman, her daughter had become extremely ill. Her adult daughter, she had her come and stay with her. They told her she had to throw her out. She couldn't have that daughter living there. You know, no matter what they do to live a normal life, somebody's got their nose in it telling them not to.
Yeah.
So I agree with you completely. Whatever movement that would be, I would support it. And I agree people don't need it. In fact, it's more damaging to their health than probably living off the grid someplace and struggling with raising their own food and all of that.
You shouldn't have to live off the grid. You shouldn't have to go out in the middle of nowhere. You should be able to have a choice. Now, there are going to be some people who want this, and I think there's plenty of them out there for them. But for the people who really and truly understand what they're dealing with and don't want to live in under one of these regimes, I think they ought to have an option. It shouldn't be up to the government to tell you that this is where you have to live. It shouldn't be up to a $70 billion annual industry that sucks the blood out of you that you have to have one of these things. When you look at why we're building them, not one reason is ever given to protect the homeowners. They say it enhances property values. That's the biggest lie on earth.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I think it damages the property values. And then you buy it for the amenities, and then you find you don't use it because you don't feel good there. Who are you going to play tennis with? Who are you going to swim with? Oh, my God, I was at the pool, and the president that's been harassing me came down. I find they don't use the amenities.
Well,
so you're dead right.
Yeah. Oh, I had... I had someone from the industry on, years ago in another show, and he said that the use of these amenities are down. But developers like them because they can sell them. You know, you've got the amenities of a resort here. Come and see these beautiful pools. But what they don't tell you is that your mortgage, your home, is being held hostage to make sure that that pool is as pristine as it should be, by a bunch of people who don't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all.
Well, the thing I can do is what I'm doing, and that is to train enough advocates that when the person feels they can't handle it anymore, they have a skilled person to come in affordably, be with them, figure their way through. Do you want to move out? Do you want to sell? If you have to go to court, I'm here to see that it's fair. And what's interesting is when we assert ourselves, and I do very often with my organization, that I will contact, say they're forced to arbitration or something, and I contact and say, this is Dr. Huffer with EAA, and we are advocating for this person. We are going to ensure that the federal rights are followed. Would you please send me your forms and a copy of your policy? Already we've started to turn them saying, who's this and why are they looking and federal what? And I say we work nationally and now internationally. I've got a client in Saskatchewan. They don't have it easy in Canada either.
Oh, I know.
But just by having an oversight body that says this damn well has to be fair, and my client needs this, and my client needs that, in order to make it fair. And, you know, when you say things that are unarguable, it helps. When you say they must have dignity, do you have any problem with that? We must communicate, you know, clearly, no legalese, and they can't argue. So you lay the ground rules with what's not arguable. And then you come in and only it's only with the fact that we already have the law we can carry in with us. We are not out asking people to sign a petition to create a law. We have the law, and it has teeth. And my theory, to get back to what you're saying, shouldn't all people get it? Well, yeah, most of us are damaged now anyway, so we can be diagnosed. However, my thought in starting this work was the disabled can lead. That we have this law, we can open eyes to dignity, respect, fairness, et cetera, again, by using it. Once that door is opened, it's just like Martin Luther King coming through. He opened doors that the rest of us were saying, oh, my God, I'm discriminated against, too, and I'm not black. What's happening? So when you open any door for more justice, it helps because others then say, why not me? And they can come in too. So it's the only way I've found in all these years to truly make a difference. Now I want to branch from individual cases where it does make a difference to now a larger view with John Jay and certain projects we will do to affect the institutions and to bring awareness to the larger picture.
How long does it take to train an advocate?
18 hours.
That's it?
18 hours of training. And if they're lawyers, if they're behavioral health professionals, if they're anyone that needs relicensing, normally we can, our work passes muster for relicensing like paralegals. We also, in part of it, 6 hours of it is ethics training. So it meets the ethics requirement for all of those. Many lawyers are taking my class, and all of them have said, I've changed how I do my practice as a result, because they just didn't see certain things. Once you see the game, once you see the power game, everything changes. Once you see the courtroom and the game that's played, once in the neighborhood, you see how the intimidation goes down. Read what comes to you. And if it's intimidating, wait a minute, what are they doing? It's almost a brainwashing, you know? And then the power is enhanced by how dependent are you on the other side that you're fighting? Well, in your home, you're dependent for everything, for peace, for, you know, your happiness, for any good feeling about life, for your health, getting up in the morning and driving out. It's a setup to make you totally under duress once someone in a position of power decides to make you a target.
I want to go back. We've only got a little time, a few more minutes left. But I do want to go back to the story that you were telling us about the 48 residents who were denied their mail. What happened to them? I mean, I've heard so many things over the years, Karen, as I'm sure you realize, but I've never heard people being denied their mail before. I know they've been denied access to their homes. They've been denied, you know, in gated communities. They've had their transponders turned off where they need to get permission to go on the property that they pay for, that they own, for God's sakes. You know, the abuses, the ridiculous stuff that they do, but denied your mail?
Yeah, that's really federally illegal. But they were being denied access to the area where their mailboxes were and literally denied to go get their mail on the premises. And it wound up that they lost the first round.
They, the homeowners, or they, the association?
The homeowners lost the first round.
Okay.
So the association appealed, and the case is still in appeal. And the last I knew, nothing had changed. And when I asserted myself, we have to go through, if you're going to be an expert witness, you have to go through a certain test, usually with the court, where they determine, do you know enough? You know, in forensic psychology, you are bringing the science to the issue, the forensics to the court, the science behind what you're saying. So I was bringing the people's conditions and the sociological view of it and all of that to the court. And I passed the test, and so we were passing all of the different levels. And then the other side hired an expert out of Seattle that wrote a letter to them and said that, oh, I can't even remember. He just said terrible things about me that weren't true because he didn't want me as an expert, obviously, or they didn't want me as an expert because we were doing them in. And we are left there at the moment. I've responded to it and demonstrated that what he said wasn't true, provided what they needed, but that's kind of where we are. So I don't know. I can let you know how it turns out one day.
So it's all, but it's still ongoing then?
Yeah, they're so sad because they're all elderly and they're all ill. And the man that I'm dealing with mostly is blind, and oh my God. And so they were shocked when the attorney said, well, this is what they're saying about your expert. And they just came to me like, could it be true? Did you lie to us? And are you a fraud? Oh, I mean, it was really sad because as they were trying to pick away all of these people's strengths, you know. But that happens. That's the world of being an expert in court. I hate doing it. I do it reluctantly for certain situations, but it's so mean and it's so filled with lies and untruth and games that it's very tiresome. But, you know, if I commit to do it, then I know that's the name of the game. And again, you got to know the rules and how the game is coming down, you know. And then you can take your position in it, and then you look for your strength. And in the case of what we're choosing to work in right now, the strength is in the federal law.
I've seen and heard of cases where the association attorney has really, really gone after, smeared the homeowner, smeared everybody associated with the homeowner, where the industry attorneys have lied through their teeth. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely horrifying. And they get away with it. They get away with it, which is just galling to me.
Yes, because they don't know the certain law that would protect against that if it's invoked. Remember 12203. Always remember 12203.
We're running out of time. We've got just barely enough time for you to give us your web stuff and also contact information and how anybody listening to the show who might want to be an advocate can get in touch with you to become one.
Yes, my email is legalabuse@gmail.com. Legalabuse, all one word, @gmail.com. Feel free to email me. It comes right to me and I will answer you personally. My website is equalaccessadvocates.com. Equalaccessadvocates.com. If you put my name, Karen with an I, K-A-R-I-N, Huffer, into the internet, you'll get more stuff back than you want. So I'm not hard to find. Yes, become an advocate, for God's sakes. We need to become advocates for one another. And every homeowners association should have their local disability trained advocate on site ready to help people. I don't know if that's possible, but I sure would like to see that happen. Because if you fill these courts with people forcing federal law, Congress did something right in 2008, passing the ADAAA, and it protects me and you. Very, very important. It's the strongest thing we've got going at the moment.
Karen, thank you so very much for coming and sharing your knowledge and your expertise and your experiences with us. Good luck, and I hope you'll be back sometime real soon.
Thank you, Shu. I will look forward to it and love what you do. So appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks to all of you for listening.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.